You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
What can I show you?
We're supposed to land soon. I'm the only one awake.
I don't understand. What can I show you?
Show me Homestead 2.
Homestead 2 is the fourth planet of the Bacta system.
Right. And where are we?
We are in transit from Earth to Homestead 2. We will arrive in approximately 90 years. We land on Homestead 2 in 90 years, 3 weeks, and 1 day.
No, wait. How long ago did we leave Earth?
Approximately 30 years ago.
I woke up too soon.
Welcome, everyone, to the 602 Club, the first episode of 2017. For those listening later on, it won't matter at all, but welcome back to the show. We're so excited. We've been on a wonderful vacation after we all celebrated with Rogue One. I've got some great hosts here with me. And before I even introduce them, I'm just going to ask how many times you saw Rogue One. Richard, how many times did you see Rogue One?
I saw it 3 times.
Nice. And Christy, how many times did you end up seeing Rogue One?
Ironically, it was 3 times for me as well.
Nice, nice. Excellent. Well, I'm at 5. I'm longing to go back. We'll see if that gets to happen. But lots of other movies came out over the holiday season of 2016. And we're going to be talking about one of those films tonight. We're going to talk about Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt that came out. And see if it lived up to the hype that we all had with original sci-fi. But before we do that, just want to remind everybody you can find the 602 Club all over the place. You can find us on iTunes, itunes.com/TrekFM. You can find us on Twitter, @TrekFM, Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM. We have the listeners-only discussion group as well on Facebook. That's the Babel Conference. So if you want to find that, type Babel into the search field on Facebook, or you can click discussion on any of the menu bars at our website, trek.fm. You can leave us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/trekfm. And of course, last but not least, you can hit us up with an email over there at trek.fm/contact. Just choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and that will come straight to me. Now, want to introduce the people that we have here tonight. You already heard them, but Christy, this is, I think, maybe your third time to be on a podcast, so I'm so excited. We met each other at Dragon Con this year. I'm good friends with your husband online, and we got to spend, my wife and I, a lot of time with you and your husband there at Dragon Con, and we're looking forward to doing it again this year. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Dragon Con was a blast meeting you guys and getting to have lunch and dinner on a regular basis in a Mexican restaurant that was abandoned.
Yes. It looked like something out of a zombie film.
It was weird. Never in my life done something like that before.
But it gave us a good place to record a podcast together without anybody really bothering us. So that was fun.
Yeah, but thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And, of course, a man who needs no introduction, the one, the only, Richard from our Star Trek The Next Generation podcast, Earl Grey. How's it going, Richard?
I'm doing good. How are you today?
I'm great, man. I'm really good. It's great to be back. You know, it's nice to be back in the saddle or the office chair.
Seat.
Yeah, at the desk. So, well, not really. We're in the 602 Club, so yeah, I'm not really setting the scene with Ruby and the drinks that are flowing like wine, and I'm sorry, folks. I'm out of practice. Okay, let's just talk about the film. So original sci-fi, we had a wonderful film that came out earlier in 2016. Richard, you and I talked about Arrival, and it was one of those movies that it captured my imagination because of what it did and we just don't get a ton of original sci-fi. And so with Passengers coming out at the end of 2016, I was really excited because, again, it's original. It's not based off a book. It's just a movie coming out that seemed to be another big sci-fi epic. So I wanted to ask both of you, going into the movie, what were you expecting it to be before you saw it? Christy, what about you? Did you have any expectations going in after you'd seen the trailers?
Yeah, I definitely did. It seemed at first when the trailer started out that it was going to be like Earth was destroyed. And so the only place they had to go was to send these people on to find a new home.
Like Grown Up Wall-E.
Yeah. and then part of the way into the trailer, even he says something like, we were woken up for a reason. It seemed to me like they were going to turn it into a conspiracy theory. Like they woke up two people early and they were going to have them do some dark purpose for the government. I don't know.
Yes, yes. No, exactly. I think you're right on. I there was something about it where I was like it felt like it was going to be this big mystery about what's happening. Why did they wake up? All of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was going to be much more action oriented and like a lot of intrigue and drama.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Richard? What were you thinking when you saw the previews?
I actually didn't see any of the previews, to be quite honest. the first time I actually heard about it was the Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence making fun of each other special or whatever they were doing for some network they're doing it for, and that was the first mention I actually even heard about it. And they're talking about it as a sci-fi movie, and then I was like, all right, fine, I'll go see it. And then next you know, this podcast came up. So really, I didn't go into it with seeing any of the trailers, to be quite honest.
So you had no expectations going in.
I had no expectations.
That's cool, though. I mean, there's something about going to see a movie and, I mean, all you've probably seen is the poster. You know, like, there's something about that that is very cool. And I love it when that happens. It doesn't seem like it happens very much for me these days, but that's awesome, Richard. So you're very much a blank slate. So I'm really excited to kind of dive in and see then what you thought of the movie. And so the story, I think, is something that became really interesting because, Christy, what you and I described really isn't what the movie's about at all.
Nope.
So what did you end up thinking about what we ended up getting in the movie?
So I was definitely surprised. I love that they went the route that they did with it in not only making it a love story, but that it had this deeper meaning of, like, what is the meaning of life? Why is life worth living?
Yeah, no, it is very different. And I think anybody who hasn't seen the movie, if you're listening, will definitely going to spoil it. So just your warning is out there now. But it was much more of a relationship drama movie and a human movie than it was anything about a conspiracy theory or intrigue or anything like that. This really is a movie about how do you survive in the most awkward, strange circumstance that you find yourself in. And so I guess the main thing we should probably dive into is the actual story itself, which is Earth is kind of a paradise at this point, and people are leaving Earth for colony worlds, and it usually takes, what, it was like 120 years, sometimes 200 years
something
to get
like
to
that,
these
yeah.
different colony worlds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people are being put to sleep in cryopods and then shipped off to these colony worlds to create a new life for themselves. And that was something that was just fascinating to me, this idea that, I don't know, and Richard, I guess we could talk about that. This is a whole new universe. It's almost as if, like, the Federation kind of exists. Like, Earth is perfect, but people are bored.
Paradise, yeah.
Yeah, so paradise is boring. So they're going off to these colony worlds to create a new life for themselves. Or maybe they're like our main character, Jim, and he...
There's nothing left to build.
Yeah.
Or nothing to, left to create. And I can relate to that. I mean, especially when if, I don't know, obviously we don't hear about what his career is like or anything like that. But like, I mean, if you're at the top of your game or you plateaued, or especially as a mechanical engineer, I mean, and there's nothing else. Yeah, it's far more exciting to go to another place, another land or another world, and basically start from scratch again. And I mean, maybe the whole entire Earth is now concrete now. God, I hope not.
Is it a garbage pit like Wall-E?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because they kind of show Earth in, like, I think maybe one scene, and Earth kind of looks more like Coruscant. Like, it looks like this, it's turned into almost like a city planet where there just seem to be massive buildings everywhere, and it's this place, and Jim even says, if something's broken, you don't fix it, you just replace it. You know, it just seems to be this paradise where everybody has most of their needs taken care of, and people are looking for something more. And so I think it was interesting for the story to have that human element of that we're always looking for a challenge. You know, it like these are the new pioneers. They're traveling from, you know, civilization to go forge life in a completely new place. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. So I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask you guys, would y'all do that? Like, give up your entire life and sleep on a ship for 200 years to go start a new life in a brand new place? Because to me, that was one of the questions. Like, would I do that? I don't know. What about you, Richard?
Well, I guess that would depend on what my situation on Earth would be. I mean, if I could bring my daughter and my wife with me, then you bet your ass I would. I mean, because it's just it's awesome. I mean, that's very exciting to basically, like you said, pioneer into a new frontier and basically start over and build something and maybe even build a legacy that's tremendous over in that new world. And yeah, I mean, I would, but I mean, it really would depend on whether or not if I didn't have family, yeah, I probably would have done the same. But if no one wants to go, then yeah, I probably wouldn't go either.
Yeah, I think Richard's right. I think it just totally depends on your situation, because it's like, if you feel like, A, you have no one that you care about leaving, then it's not a big deal. Of course, you know, I would definitely go off and pioneer on a new planet. But then if things are pretty good, if, you know, the condition of the Earth itself is fine, then I would probably just stay here and not risk all of that.
Yeah,
it's scary.
Yeah, no, really scary. Well, and the thought that, too, you know, while you're gone, everybody you know is going to live their life and die, so that once you come out of cryostasis, you're on a brand new planet, you legitimately don't know anyone. And for all intents and purposes, you've time traveled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so where you're from, the world is completely different. And where you're going to, the world is completely different. So whatever they told you the world you were going to is going to be like, it's like 200 years. It's not going to be the same. Like, that just blew my mind, this whole idea that people would just trust their life to this company of bringing them on this crazy looking starship all the way across the galaxy to a brand new planet. And yeah, it just, that was something that was really interesting to me. So
saying too about trusting a company, I love that they have that call out to her saying, that's just a marketing line. Say something true.
yes, exactly. Because, you know, he joins this group because he is somebody who has a desirable trait, as the company calls it. Like, he is a fixer. He is really good with his hands. He is very good with building things and creating things and fixing broken things. He's just one of those people who has that knack. And so his ticket's discounted on this big starship. It's called the Avalon. And it allows him to be able to make the journey because he wouldn't have the money otherwise. But then the rest of his life on the planet that they arrive at, which is called Homestead 2, real original, they're going to take 20% of everything he earns for the rest of his life. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is that just 20% of what you earn in your lifetime or 20% of every paycheck?
That's a great question. but it seems like to me, basically, it's a new form of indentured servitude.
Yeah, right. That's a good comparison.
And how are you able to even get out of that?
It doesn't seem like he's ever able
you're not,
to get
now
out
you're trapped.
Because, yeah, you are trapped. And so,
but does that mean his children, if he has any on Homestead 2, would fall under that contract as well?
Man, see, that's the question that I start asking too. And I guess it's probably just him and his family would be free at that point. But now, those are all the kinds of questions that this movie, I think, does raise. And of course, they're not going to answer all those. It doesn't have enough time. Yeah. But it did make me think all that stuff, because this whole creation of a universe that they do was really fascinating to me. And I don't know, Richard, to me, it also kind of got into that idea. You know, people ask when they watch Star Trek, you know, for humans, is a utopia viable? And this movie seemed to be saying, well, for some people, but for others, no. Like, they want that living on the edge feeling. They want that pioneering spirit to be alive in them. They want to get their hands dirty, you know, like, for them, utopia isn't what they want. I don't know. Did you read it that way at all? Especially thinking kind of in those next generation terms?
Well, when they were talking about Earth as a utopia, I instantly drew to the Federation and everything on Star Trek about the utopia society. And obviously the economy part is still there. But like when it comes to like getting your needs done and everything, yeah, I love how simple this story is. Yeah, we know what utopia looks like. Earth is apparently that utopia that, and now these people want to leave, or like there's a couple planets that have already been colonized that people already want to leave. And obviously, yeah, they want that edge to you know, build something or make something of their lives or even, I don't know, hunt or something like that. But I mean, there's all kinds of things that. Yeah, this utopia, maybe it's not as cracked up as it sounds.
No, I completely agree with you. I'm right there with you. I feel like it seemed like a good thing for some people, and then it almost felt like this company kind of was preying on that feeling for others. Like they'd found their corner of the market where that people don't want to be a part of this kind of perfect world anymore. They want to go look for a new one. And they found the best way to do that is build these starships, and we find a way to get people's incomes for the rest of their lives tied to us. And it is perfect. I love that she's so cynical about it. You know, like it's all about the ones and zeros for them on their balance sheet. That's all they care about is how many. She said they earned some quadrillion dollars, like
something like
the year
that
before.
Yeah, I was
they
just thinking
left
the number too.
Yeah, which is like a mil, like what did she say?
I think it was a million billion
millions or 100 billion billions or something like that. I'm not good with numbers, so somebody email us, tell me how I'm wrong. Yeah, I don't know, that was crazy. I do love, though, in kind of creating this universe. To me, what was really interesting is I loved the ship design. I thought it was really cool, and it seemed actually very realistic. You know, you have the moving parts, so you create gravity, and then the long spear kind of at the front, which is their shield generator. I thought that was really interesting. To me, it felt like somebody had put a lot of thought into this and how this ship would actually work, to make it seem realistic for traveling in space this long. I don't know. Richard and Christy, I mean, both of you like different types of sci-fi. Did it feel realistic enough to you? Or you like it? What'd you think?
It really did to me. And I just have to say, I like that they show you from the get-go a lot of schematics, I guess I would call them, or blueprints, so that you don't even have to be told verbally how the ship works or the shield generator. You see it. You know, how you're saying they show that there's this cone protecting them from all of these little asteroids coming in. And then, you know, as they're talking about what's going on later wrong with the ship, they're showing you diagrams of the internal structure of the ship. But yeah, right. I loved it. And I actually was wondering if I'm the only person that thought that the design of it kind of looked like DNA.
Mm.
Oh,
it does.
That is like a, that yes. twisting double helix about that. Ribbon. Yes, that is awesome, Christy. Thank you for pointing that out, because now you just blew my mind.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool looking ship. I mean, when I first saw it, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And then, of course, you know, seeing the shield and everything, and it's like, it's a very simple design. It's I think it's very elegant for a ship that I guess is going to be traveling for at least 127 years. But like, yeah, it's very simple, and that's ultimately what I love about the entire movie. The movie is very simple. It's not something where you have to catch up on, you know, techno babble or anything like that. Even the sci-fi part, it was very simple. We got to do this, and in order to do this, we got to do that and that. Okay, you know, that's what I absolutely love about this film. I mean, yeah, it's obviously predominantly more of a relationship film. But like it's, I mean, even when they do start talking about it, it's very simple and it's very easy to understand. And actually, it was a breath of fresh air thinking about that, because I was like, oh great, I don't have to think through this.
Oh yeah, you mean so. Like the process of what they're doing there and how they're getting where they're going.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a very simple film, but I mean, I love it for. I mean, I think they had a right balance of sci-fi, technical babble, I guess. And without getting away from the true story.
And I don't know if you liked, too, how they really made it clear how it was like a gigantic computer. And that, you know, since he has this mechanical knowledge, that he can go in and just pull out the processor or whatever and plug in a new one.
And how lucky for the story that he's a mechanic.
Yeah. Was that too lucky?
Yeah. And how lucky that the right guy wakes up. The deck officer, just enough to give them what they need so they can fix the ship and save everyone and themselves. So, I mean,
yeah,
there are some coincidences in the film that are a little bit much, but I'm right there with both of you. I think one of the things that the film does is that it plays off some things that we'd already seen before. And obviously, I mentioned it earlier as a joke, but it does kind of remind me of WALL-E. It's very much like that, where the ship is technologically advanced enough to run itself and it doesn't really need much of a human crew. And when it's on autopilot, the computer and everything is smart enough to fix itself. You know, they have replacement parts if they need it and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the only reason that anything really goes wrong is because on their way, they hit a pretty massive asteroid. And even though the ship has shields, it still has a huge impact on the ship. It's basically intergalactic Titanic, mm-hmm. because it hits not an iceberg, but it hits an asteroid that throws things out of whack. And, mm-hmm. you know, Jim doesn't realize that until much later on. So, yeah, no, I thought that the look and the feel of everything, It just felt right. It felt like an advanced Earth design. And I gotta say, I really want to be at that bar with Arthur all the time, because that was the coolest bar. That Art Deco design, I was like, we need to redo the 602 Club just like that.
I agree. I liked the gold.
Yeah, no, really nice. So yeah, I really liked all of those parts of the film. This is an interesting part, though. I wanted to talk to you guys about the characters, because obviously the big draw for this movie, I think, for most people was, hey, it's Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. They're in a movie together. And I mean, I'm not going to complain about either one of them. They're two of the best looking people in Hollywood. So,
nope, not here.
What did you? So Jim's the first one that wakes up, and he's the mechanical engineer that we've been talking about. What did you end up thinking about Chris Pratt and his portrayal and what they gave him to do in the movie?
I felt for the guy. I mean, I probably would have done the same thing if I'd have known how to do all that and you know, wake someone up. I probably would have done the same thing. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate, and it sucks even more that he had the, I guess, the lowest level of passenger.
Oh yeah, that was so sad.
That he couldn't.
It was.
Like, he had to deal with that for at least a year. But like, yeah, I felt for the guy. I'm surprised he didn't do it any sooner than a year, because that probably would have drove me nuts. Because we all need that human interaction. But yeah, to go that long, whew.
And did you like that, that they also made that sort of joke between him and Arthur, saying, you know, he's like, well, I'm here. And he's like, you're not the same.
Yeah.
When he slaps him and he's like, ah, you didn't even feel that. That didn't even bother you. And he's like shaking off his hand because he hurt that he got hit the guy with the metal head. Yeah, that was really funny.
But yeah, like, yeah. I totally agree. I can't believe that he went an entire year without waking anybody up. But then I really felt for that struggle of, but if I do, I'm stealing someone else's life from them. They don't have a choice. They can't take that back once I do it.
Yeah. And it's sad, but when he actually pulled her out of that cryostasis, I actually didn't feel that bad for her. No offense to the character or anything like that. But like, it's like, you can't blame him.
Right. Yeah. But it was terrible later that she does end up, after all, finding out from Arthur and not directly from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it is a good time to ask the question, which is, if you're Jim, what do you do? Do you wake somebody up, or do you sacrifice your own life and say, no, I'll die alone and crazy?
I think we all would like to say that we would not wake somebody up, but I think that ultimately humans seek other human companionship, and that you're going to end up doing it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If it was like maybe 10, 15 years left on the journey, then yeah, I'd probably wait it out. But the reality is it like 90 years? Yeah, you'll be dead by then.
Yeah, you're like, am I going to spend my entire life completely alone, knowing that already?
Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, fortunate enough that it was a mechanical engineer that was woken up, but I would have woken up someone that with some kind of mechanical engineering or some kind of engineer that could actually help me out instead of like a writer. But, you know, that's me.
Well, you realize what the logic was. He went, hot one. Mm-hmm. He said, I'll wake up the hot one.
Well, and that was, okay, yeah. That was an interesting thing because, yeah, she's pretty. But what I liked is that he spent all that time, like, watching her videos that they apparently have people record and introduce themselves and talk about why they're going and all that. And then he read all of her writings, her books, and I'm sure magazine articles and all that stuff. So it was really interesting that, yeah, I mean, he looks at her and it's Jennifer Lawrence. She's hot. But then he spends all this time getting to know her through all that she said and written. And that really is the thing that for a while makes him not feel alone. But then I think also at the same time remind him that he is utterly alone. And so, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I think I would probably have to wake somebody up because, I mean, yeah, I'm sure there are a billion books you can read, but the human person cannot spend its eternity alone. I mean, it's just, it's not what we're made for, you know? We're made to be with people. That's why we commune in cities, you know? And we have friends and we get married and,
Well, yeah, like the vast amount of geography we have available and we choose to congregate together.
Exactly. I mean, people congregate in places like Phoenix, where it's like 120 degrees during certain days. I guess because people they know there live there. So that's my point. The question, I think, of what you would do is really interesting, but I think it really just drives home that point that we're human beings and we're made to be in relationship with each other. And without that,
social. Yeah.
There's something in us that's just not right. And it causes us to go crazy, which I love that basically he's kind of crazy by the time he decides to wake her up. I mean, he's walking around with a sheet tied around his neck with no pants.
Yeah.
So
I love that part of the movie.
He's just like, yeah, well, who cares?
It's a little awkward. Yeah. I mean, Christy was like, oh, well, hey, good job.
I mean, he was a little scraggly at that point.
Yeah. But no, it's an interesting question. And I think it is a good, like, moral question because, yeah, he is basically taking away her life and in some ways killing her. It is somewhat like a murder. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting to me, because flipping that around, the movie makes her kind of make the same decision that he does. I thought that was very interesting because at the end, when they're trying to save themselves, he has to be outside. He has to be the one to hold open the exhaust port so that the, I guess we'll just call it the warp drive, can let loose the excess radiation. And by doing that, when she releases the lever, he's most likely going to die. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting that she ends up kind of having to make that choice. Do I sacrifice a life to save myself? And so it's a little bit different. It's not quite the same. But at the same time, they're similar enough, so they have to make those choices. And I thought that was really interesting and smart for the movie to kind of have them subtly mirror each other. Because the choice she has to make is just as difficult. Like, but at the same time, too, if she doesn't do what she does, 5,000 other people die.
Right, yeah. I like that he says to her, he's like, it's not just you and me. If you do this, then you're saving these other 4,098 people.
Yeah, I agree.
Whatever the number is. I'm bad with numbers, too.
Yeah, I mean, they have 5,000 people who are asleep. Well, it was 4,998 at that point. But then there was 200 and some odd crew as well. So, I mean, we're talking a lot of people that are in their hands. And so, yeah, them having to make this decision, it's a big deal because she would be choosing if he dies to basically stay alone. And then does she wake somebody up so she's not alone for the, 88 years they have left? So, yeah, it's an interesting discussion. So,
and then did you like also that they give her the opportunity to go back into hibernation?
Yep. I was just about to say that too. Yeah, I really like that she eventually made that choice to stay with him and I guess grow a life with him. Well, as we saw at the end. So, well, we really don't see it. We just see the vegetation overgrow. But yeah.
Well, you see them in the pool first.
After 80 years? Or are you talking about the...
No, it's like right after she decides that she's going to have a life with him, they're in the pool together, and they say, hell of a life.
Ah, got it.
And then it goes to the trees.
You're right.
And honestly, just speaking from the perspective of, another person in a monogamous relationship, it really was a heartwarming moment to, know that feeling of you've chosen to be with this person for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting too, because they've made that decision, and they don't really have anybody else to choose from.
They could wake more people up.
Yeah, but they are kind of like the Adam and Eve of this ship. They're going to live a life, and there isn't going to be anybody else, and they're not going to be able to have kids because their kids would then grow up and not have anybody to be with.
That's what Jennifer and I, that's what Jennifer and I were talking about at the end, because she was talking to me about it. I was like, oh, I really wish they would have showed, if they had kids or not. And I'm like, I think they would have. I mean, after...
But then who do their kids, get together with? Because then they just have their brothers and sisters, and that's awkward.
They'd write them a letter and tell them they have to wait it out. Incest is wrong.
You need to wait till you're like 40, and then you can get to the planet. Yeah. I got the feeling that they didn't have kids. So,
let's just go with that.
Yeah, because that turns off. I concur real quick.
Yeah.
what did you think about Jennifer Lawrence, Aurora Lane, aka Sleeping Beauty? Her name's Aurora. So, I thought that was funny.
I actually did not catch that. Wow.
I didn't either. He said that.
Isn't that funny though? That all these things. She's Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah. That's one of Jennifer's favorite Disney movies, dude. I wouldn't even thought of that. I wonder if she saw that as well.
That's one of mine. I have it on Blu-ray. I loved her character. I really was curious about that he ended up choosing a journalist. I mean, if you just think about all of the options he could have chosen from, that just was a surprise to me. But it was nice to see, like you said, Matt, of watching her videos and talking about that for her dad, writing was always about his experiences he had been through and that he just wrote about those. But for her, it was writing about things that she had never done before. She never wrote about herself.
I absolutely loved her character. She was so fascinating especially how many videos that they had of her. I mean, it's kind of creepy that they would record something like that and have all that kind of information just readily available for almost anyone to look at.
Yeah. Like, why would you need it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, that's a little too much. But yeah, I loved her character. I mean, I've always loved Jennifer Lawrence as an actress, and it's just it worked for me. Yeah, it was in funny enough. Again, you know, she's a writer, and you know, able to tell all those stories in those elegant ways that writers do.
I really thought her character was interesting. And I thought it was interesting to me to see Jennifer Lawrence play a character that's very different than anybody else she's really played. I mean, this is not Katniss. You know, she is somebody who's kind of a more normal human being. You know, she's not a superhero. She's just a woman who is kind of running away from Earth because she's just never been satisfied, and she's trying to find something to satisfy her. You know, even her friend says that in the video she's watched. You know, you never liked it here. Nothing was ever good enough for you here. I hope you find whatever it is that will fulfill you. And it seemed like her character arc became that she became comfortable with just being herself, not comparing herself to her father, but also just enjoying life for what it ended up bringing her, instead of always feeling like she always had to go to the next thing, because she was just kind of forced to be okay with her life. And it was a really, I thought, it was an interesting character arc. And I liked Jennifer Lawrence's portrayal. I thought she did it well. And I mean, I've always liked her as an actress. I don't know if it's the most challenging role she's ever played for herself, but I liked that it was different than the other things that she's done, especially in the last few years, which have all been very much very kind of similar roles. You know, she's just the resident badass.
Yeah.
And here she's just kind of a normal woman. She played it great. Good question. Did you like the chemistry between them? Did you buy it? Do you feel like these two stars had the chemistry you needed?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You could definitely feel it. Like maybe not the first day or the second day, but after a little while, when they started really talking to each other, you know, Chris Pratt's character had more of an advantage than Jennifer Lawrence's character. But I mean, yeah, after a while, yeah, you could definitely tell. And I thought it was genuine too. I mean, I'm sure both of them are really good friends now. So
yeah, I thought it was interesting. It didn't seem like they gave as much background on his character as they did on hers. I mean, all we know is that he's always been either, you know, a mechanical engineer, or I thought he just said a mechanic. So I was a little confused there. But, you know, she talks about how her father just suddenly had a heart attack one day, and then she had to figure out how to move on from there. She was only 17, and she's a journalist and all of this stuff. And I feel like you just really don't get as much about him. But I definitely did think that they had a great relationship between each other. And you can tell that, you know, it's this deep, true feeling that it's not just that outer attraction. And that's why, too, I think it breaks your heart so much when she accidentally finds out that he woke her up on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But
right, without him being able to tell her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was good because there was that thing that was always going to be hanging over. I mean, their sort of Democles was he woke her up. She doesn't know it. They have to find out, you know, and in true life fashion, you know, if you tell somebody a lie long enough, the truth will end up coming out, whether it's a robot that tells them or not, which I loved. Jim, these are not robot questions.
When he asked him that one question, he just these cannot are compute
robot questions. I liked them together, and I thought it was really good. And it was interesting, too, because, you know, when they do decide to finally going to be together in the end, even though they save the ship and all, and they've been through kind of hell and back, they've kind of seen each other at their best and their worst of humanity. And I think going through that together allows them to her, I think, to be able to forgive him for what happened. You know, like, I feel like that's the storyline, because otherwise I feel like it would have taken her a lot longer to come around to that if, you know, their lives hadn't been in danger.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, it's like she's the only person that can help him fix the problem, or else they're both going to go and probably everybody else on the ship.
What did you end up... Martin Sheen as Arthur, I thought, was just wonderful. I mean, him as the bartender was, what great casting, because he was just so, he's just perfect. Is that the android?
Yeah, he was perfect. I agree. Definitely very witty and just, I mean, he makes a great android. I mean, we could put him on the Enterprise or something like that. How about that? Bartender, can you imagine that?
He was so gifted at that, just keeping the, stoic face or whatever you want to call it, polite constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really sold it as, I'm an android.
Why are you always cleaning a glass? I'm the only one awake. Trick of the trade, Jim. People don't like a bartender not doing anything. He was wonderful. I really liked him. And it's kind of sad that, you know, Lawrence Fishburne is in this movie. And he doesn't really get too much to do other than die in about 5 minutes.
Was I the only one that
immediately
went,
surprise.
Morpheus?
Yeah, it was a good surprise. I actually liked it. It was like I said, I didn't see any of the trailers and didn't even know who was in it except for Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt. And it was a very good, welcoming surprise. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Why didn't he tell them to take the blue pill?
I know.
Oh, goodness. No, he was great, too. Unfortunately, yeah, he doesn't really get a ton to do, but a great actor. And nice that I feel like it was a good job to just kind of pull somebody who immediately had some gravitas on screen. Mm-hmm. So you kind of wanted to listen to him. And, you know, and I think because you cast him, you do kind of feel bad that he's going to die soon. Even though you don't really know him, but it's Lawrence Fishburne, and everybody's like, no, not Morpheus, don't die. Perry White, no.
And it was so interesting, too, that they, it kind of sad that they ended up finding out what's going on with him. 612 disorders or something like that, and there is no hope for you.
Yeah. He was a goner when they started talking about or listed off all those diseases. Jeez,
this pill will ease your pain.
That was, I mean, yeah. When they said there were that many disorders, I was like, I don't even know how he's alive at all. So yeah, it was nuts. It was really interesting because One of the things that Martin Sheen's android Arthur says to Jim was really interesting. This whole idea of kind of like time and place. And he said to him, you know, people always say, oh, I wish I was here. But if you were there, you'd probably be thinking the same thing you are here. Man, I wish I was somewhere else. And that whole idea of kind of making the most of where you are, that's an interesting idea, because human existence, and I know for myself, we are so unhappy most of the time because we want to be doing something else. We want to be doing a different job. We want to be dating a different girl or boy. We want to be, whatever, just fill in the blank. And once we get that, then it's always like, oh, well, the grass is greener next door. You know, and it reminded me, and Richard, this is, I think you'll appreciate this. It reminded me of the Picard quote from Generations, where he said, you know, someone once told me that time was a predator that stalked us all of our lives, but I'd rather believe that time is a companion that goes along with us on the journey and remind us to cherish every moment because they'll never come again. And I felt like that's kind of what Arthur was telling Jim. It's like, you're alive, you know. You have to find a way to make the most of where you are, because if you don't, you're just going to go crazy and you're missing out. And I thought that was, I don't know, I really liked that message. I thought it was really important.
Well, but if you also have nothing left to live for, you know, someplace, really, you're not missing much. But then again, maybe if we're talking about Aurora, that she's missing out on all her friends and all, in what we don't even know what family she has left except for her father. But like, I totally agree. It's like, maybe they're all thinking the grass is greener over at Homestead too. I don't know.
But then Arthur saying that feels like a turning point in the movie, where they seem to go toward this moral of the story that they even repeated at the end, which is, you know, don't be so busy trying to make a life that you forget to participate in the present of where you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And live it.
Yeah. Live in the moment.
And that's, I think that's so important, you know, it just in our world today. And I just felt that when he was saying that to Jim, that whole idea, you know, just make the most of where you are, with who you're with what you're doing. And, you know, if there's an opportunity for change, that, you know, you can make that, you know, but to make the most of where you are, I really liked that as a theme. And it made it nice, because anytime there's something to kind of think about a little bit after the movie, kind of has my brain going a little bit, I appreciate. You know, it's always nice when a movie gives you something more than just entertainment, you know. So the fact that a movie like this could allow me to have thoughts about my life pretty deeply was nice, you know. So I think that's always a plus. I guess the last question I have for you guys is, what would you end up rating Passengers? Christy, for you, let's do out of 10. That gives us a lot of room to work with. Where would you put Passengers?
Are we doing anything specific, like Womp Rats?
You can do anything you want. So stars, starships, I mean, whatever you want. So
I will give it 9 out of 10 galaxies. At one point off, just because of the couple of things we mentioned, like felt kind of too coincidental that he happened to be a mechanic, and you know, they happened to wake up the one guy that could help them and things like that. But I loved the visuals of the entire movie. The look of the ship, that feeling of you're on a cruise ship in space, and then the relationship between the two of them, and then that overall, like you said, message that you have to think about when you leave the movie, of go and live every day to its fullest and not just trying to get through to something better.
What about you, Richard?
Well, going into this movie, I had no expectation at all, so it was all brand new to me, except for the obviously actors. I would probably give it a right around 9.5 asteroids. And mainly because the main reason is because it's such a simple story. No techno babble. Well, there's some, but not as much in depth as it could have gone. But like it's just a simple story. You know what's going on. It doesn't take a scientist to figure out what's going on. And it's a very simple love story. And I'm not really much into love stories like a drama or something like that. But for some reason this one grabbed me and just pulled me right in. So I absolutely love this film.
I think that's really cool. I love that, especially for you, Richard. It was something that you just went in. You had no idea what to expect because you hadn't even seen anything about it. Christy, for you, it was kind of a completely different movie than both of us thought it was going to be, and you really loved it. I'm right there with you. Some of the criticisms that you had were really good, Christy. You know, there's a lot of the movie that is very, oh, well, isn't that convenient that that happens? And so some of that stuff takes away from the movie. But I thought it was neat to get kind of a character-driven story. Like you said, Richard, there isn't a lot of stuff that's taking away from that because it's a pretty simple plot. We've seen it before. I mean, it's WALL-E and Interstellar Titanic put together. It's pretty much what the movie is in a nutshell. And I liked the kind of the moral conundrums that we're facing in the movie. You know, do you wake somebody up? Do you not? And then, yeah, I love the whole idea of find a way to make the life you have good. You know, where you are, find a way to make that matter. And I thought that was great. And so I'm going to say that this is probably 6.5 out of 10 broken reactors. So it's not a perfect movie at all, but I definitely enjoyed seeing it. And I've seen it twice now. I saw it with some friends when I was in Texas, and then I saw it again with my wife on our snowpocalypse day that really didn't happen here. We went to the movies, and I enjoyed seeing it the second time, and I picked up more. And I thought it was totally worth watching. You know, I wasn't even seeing it twice, and I wasn't bored at all. I was really invested in what was happening and trying to pick up more, so it's definitely worth it. And I'm so glad that we're back at the 602 Club talking about this stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you check everything out. We mentioned at the beginning of the show on iTunes, and hit us up with some star ratings and the reviews. It's a new year. 602 Club is still trying to grow, so I'd really appreciate some new star ratings and reviews to help that happen over there on iTunes. And another great way that you can help the network, especially throughout 2017, is it's a big network. We can't do this alone. So go over to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can support the network and become part of our team. We've got some fun perks coming for you. The Patreon zone is just busting at the seams these days, with Brandon Shamatulla taking over with that. We've got roundtables and all sorts of things coming to you. Every little bit for us helps. So just again, go to patreon.com/trekfm. We've got some great associate producers here on this show. I really want to say a huge thanks to Ken Tripp, Davis Grayson, and Norman Lau. Those guys have been supporting us for such a long time, and they chosen this show to be associate producer of, and it means a lot to me. I love those guys. So make sure if you see them online, say thank you to them as well. Now, Christy, if anybody would like to talk to you about Passengers or find you online, where can they do that?
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at MorrChristy, MorrChristy.
Awesome. And Richard, if anybody is looking for you, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on Earl Grey with Lee Hutchison and Amy Nelson, where we talk nothing but the TNG world. I'm also on the Babel Conference. I pop in here and there, and I'm also on Twitter at XRansom.
Awesome, guys. Well, you could find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me here in the network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Deep Space Nine. find us on the Star Wars, the 602 Club collection. That's on iTunes. It's just all the Star Wars episodes of the 602 Club in one place. Yeah, hit that one up with a star rating review. That helps. Got a couple other places you want to go over on the Nerd Party. I've got Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills. You're going to want to check that out. We have a great time talking about all things Star Wars each week. And I just want to mention we had an amazing show with our good friend Nick Anastasio, who works for ILM, also worked on the Clone Wars with Dave Filoni and George Lucas himself. We're talking about Rogue One. So if you want a completely different perspective from somebody who's worked with the makers of Star Wars, go and check out that episode. You'll love it. Also, same time on the Nerd Party Network, I have a brand new podcast I'm doing with Drea Kaufman. It's called Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast. And we're walking through every single chapter of Harry Potter, one chapter at a time. So if you've never read Harry Potter, it's a great time to join us. If you've read Harry Potter 100 times, it's a great time to join us, because we're going to be diving into every single little minute detail that we can throughout the next few years as we walk through the series. So make sure you do that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear? All this time, the baby.